Hello everyone, welcome to Cracking Addiction. My name is Dr. Fergal Armstrong, and today we're going to talk about how exercise and lifestyle can impact upon care for people with co-occurring mental health disorders in the context of a substance use disorder. So why are we even having this conversation? Well, the answer is that guidelines focused on addiction are now beginning to mention lifestyle. So for instance, the Turning Point Alcohol Withdrawal Guidelines, or rather the Turning Point Withdrawal Guidelines from 2018, they make the following statement. Withdrawal presents an opportunity to promote harm reduction via the provision of information and education about safer AOD use practices. This may include a reduction in drug consumption and safer means of drug administration and lifestyle improvements. Now, not to be outdone, the New South Wales Guidelines on the Management of Withdrawal from Alcohol and Other Drugs, in section 2.1, the General Principles, they state, withdrawal presents an opportunity to promote harm reduction via lifestyle improvements. And in section 10.6.1, in harm reduction, they state, also provide general lifestyle advice, exercise and nutrition to reduce impacts of long-term opioid use. So here we see lifestyle being mentioned in withdrawal guidelines, but they don't really have that much prominence or salience. However, if we move over to the mental health space, the mood disorders clinical practice guideline very emphatically puts lifestyle change as the foundation for interventions in mood disorders and very explicitly discusses various lifestyle changes. So given that we now are beginning to understand how important lifestyle is, certainly in the mood disorders arena and potentially in the addiction space, well, that then begs the question, what lifestyle interventions are important? So I always like to talk about the six pillars of lifestyle medicine being the feet, the fork, the fingers, sleep, stress management, and social connection. So if we look at the feet, really that means exercise. And we'll spend the rest of this podcast talking about the role of exercise in lifestyle medicine and the benefits of exercise for our health in general. So in Australia, according to the most recent guidelines, adults should be active for most days, preferably every day. And they should be doing 2.5 hours to 5 hours of moderate intensity physical activity. And they give examples of this as being a brisk walk, playing golf, mowing the lawn, or swimming. Now, you can reduce that time by half if you're going to engage in vigorous activity. So 1.25 to 2.5 hours of vigorous intensity physical activity, such as jogging, aerobics, cycling, soccer, or netball. And you can use an equivalent combination of moderate and vigorous activity. So you can chop and change. You don't have to do one thing for that amount of time. Brisk walking is the kind of gold standard against which all other activities are measured. So the question then becomes, well, what defines brisk walking? Well, one definition is 3 to 6 mets per hour. So a met is a metabolic equivalent of task. And one met has been defined as 3.5 mils per kilogram per minute of oxygen consumption. So that's a very physiological definition. Another physiological definition is an exercise that requires a heart rate of 64 to 76% of heart rate maximum. So what is heart rate maximum? Well, heart rate maximum is 220 minus your age. So in my case, I'm 50 years old. My heart rate maximum is theoretically 170. So therefore, 64 to 76% of my heart rate maximum, I'm not going to do the maths, but 64 to 76% of 170 would be what I would need to achieve in terms of heart rate to be doing something that is akin to brisk walking. These are very physiological definitions of brisk walking. Another way that I like to think about it is that brisk walking is walking so fast that you can talk but not sing. And that's what I do on a near daily basis. So exercise has many, many advantages. I just want to talk about a couple of them. So exercise has been proven to improve memory. And it's been proven to improve memory by enhancing long-term potentiation in both depressed patients and non-depressed patients. It's been proven to actually help with depression. And remember, if there is a dose-response relationship, then that really speaks to the fact that there's a causal relationship. And we know, for instance, that if you exercise to the point that you're burning 17.5 kilocalories per kilogram per week, that is the threshold at which you are going to start getting an improvement in mood. Now, again, that's a very mathematical, physiological, experimental number, 17.5 kilocalories per kilogram per week. But it just so happens that that is roughly the threshold for the Australian activity guidelines, which, remember, were 2.5 hours of brisk walking or equivalent per week. That's the kind of threshold for the effect on depression, which is equivalent to 17.5 kilocalories per kilogram per week. So exercise has now been noted to be associated with an improved quality of life and an antidepressant effect in depressive patients and also in patients with bipolar affective disorder. And daily exercise is preferred over intermittent activity. So you really should be doing small amounts every day rather than large amounts, maybe over 2 to 3 times in the week. But what kind of exercise should we be thinking about? Well, we probably need to have a combination of both aerobic and resistance training. So we need to be doing aerobic, such as walking, running, cycling, and resistance training involving the use of weights, so weightlifting. Exercise is also known to reduce the incidence rate, i.e. reduce the frequency of occurrence of various cancers. So we know that exercise reduces the incidence of kidney cancer, colorectal cancer, breast cancer, endometrial cancer, esophageal cancer, and stomach cancer. And moreover, we also know that exercise improves cancer survival. So having been diagnosed with a cancer and having been treated for cancer, exercise per se can improve survival and reduce the recurrence rate. And this is especially true in breast cancer, but there's emerging evidence for this beneficial effect in other kinds of cancer, to the point now where Australian guidelines on the management of cancer produced by oncologists, they emphasize the role of exercise, not only in terms of its survival benefit, but also in terms of an improved quality of life, for instance, in dealing with the fatigue associated with both the diagnosis and the treatment. You're going to see a graphic here, and you're going to see specifically the relationship, the beneficial relationship between exercise and reduced mortality. So, for instance, pre-diagnosis, we have a reduced mortality for a wide range of cancers. And as I've said, I've already mentioned those before. But in this particular article, what really interests me is the post-diagnosis physical activity relationship with decreased mortality. And really, there's evidence for all-cause mortality, but in particular, breast, colorectal, hematologic cancer, and prostate cancer. Kidney cancer, those confidence intervals cross the number one, so we're not absolutely sure by that effect. But really, what I'm trying to say is we're now getting more and more evidence for the benefit of exercise in the prevention of cancer and also in the management of cancer. So why is exercise important in the AOD space? Well, I would argue that really, people are not diagnoses. There's not just one thing wrong with somebody, right? You can't label someone as being someone who's with a lived experience of a substance use disorder, and that's it. You have to look at people holistically. And if you are not optimizing all aspects of your life, you are not enhancing your ability to be the best person that you can be, And that includes exercise. Exercise, we know, improves well-being. We know it improves mood. We know it's got an antidepressant effect. We know that it's got an anti-cancer effect. We also know that it has many other beneficial effects in terms of metabolic profile, weight loss, blood pressure reduction. You factor all of that in, and we can see that exercise makes you longer and makes you be younger. So if you want to live a long and fruitful life as part of your recovery, you must think about exercise as part of that program. That's all for today, folks. My name is Dr. Fergal Armstrong, and this has been Cracking Addiction.